You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you went to the bottom, I just missed. My own sweet time didn't teach what I found. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to episode number 199 of Lead Singer Syndrome, a podcast where, if you don't know by now, I, your host, Shane Told, speaks to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a band. We've got an amazing episode. He's back for a third time. Mr. Aaron Gillespie of Under Oath. But right now, more importantly, his solo project, The Almost, has a brand new album that just came out like last week, week before. It's a banging record. It's really, really cool. It's got a really cool story behind it. We talk all about that. And it's just great to have Aaron back. He's one of my very, very good friends in music. And he's always got something to say. You know, he speaks his mind. I love that about him. And this is a great episode. Welcome aboard. I gotta just tell you some news first. So I just mentioned it's episode 199. Next week, episode 200. I'm excited. You should be excited as well. Come back, hit the subscribe button. Make sure you're here on Wednesday morning for when I release episode 200. It is a very big milestone. I'm very excited about it. But tomorrow is Halloween, and we have a very special Halloween episode with Spencer Charnas of Ice Nine Kills. Could there be a more Halloween-y guest than Spencer? So he's back on the show talking about all the success that Ice Nine Kills has had over the last year, year and a half, whatever it's been. They're just killing it right now. So that's a really cool episode. So yes, so hit the subscribe button again. Make sure tomorrow you got your schedule cleared. It's not a long episode. It's kind of a quick little micro episode, if you will. But we're celebrating Halloween on Lead Singer Syndrome, just like we did, what was it, last time with Gwar, Blothar from Gwar on the Halloween episode. So I wanted to do something special, and Spencer was super cool with doing it, and he obliged, and check it out tomorrow. A very special edition of the podcast for Halloween. If you want to get in touch with me, you know how to do that. Maybe you do by now. You can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all my email. I try to get back to most people. I'm not the best, but I try. Feel free to add the show to social media. Just search for it. It'll come up, Lead Singer Syndrome. And you can find me on there too. Mine's just at Shane Told, all the way across the board. Very, very easy. And in case you didn't know, my band Silverstein, we got a big tour planned for next year. We are celebrating 20 years as a band. We're starting out in Australia, going over and playing the Unify Festival, which is going to be very exciting. We're playing the Philippines. We're playing Hawaii. We're doing a European tour in Germany and the UK. And after that, we're playing the US and Canada with 4 Years Strong and I the Mighty, two of my friends, friends of the show and great bands. It's not to be missed. If you live in any of those places, the tickets are on sale now at silverstein20.com. That's silverstein20.com. And yeah, it's very exciting stuff. We're in the studio right now. I'm recording this from a studio, so maybe this sounds a little better than usual than my wherever I record it, my car or on my couch. But we're in the studio right now. We're almost done the new Silverstein record. It's coming out great, too. So keep your ear to the ground for all the stuff regarding that. It's very exciting times. If you want to help out this show, there's a great way to do that. And it costs you only a few bucks every month. It's called the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. And the link to check it out is leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. And yes, it starts at $6 a month. That gets you in. That gets you access to an amazing community of like-minded people, fans of the show, including myself. I'm on there. We talk every single day. It's the place you can get Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise for free, shipped to your house. Also, we have tons of bonus content coming right at you. Episodes with non-lead singers, which are pretty fun once in a while. A few lost episodes along the way that for some reason never aired on the show. So maybe you've listened to all 199 episodes and you want more. Maybe you just want to support the program. Whatever your intention is, it is what keeps the show going, making it happen every single week. For 199, 200 next week. And we've got a little Halloween special coming up tomorrow. All this stuff is because of the members of the All Access Club. Shout out to my sinners worldwide. So all I ask is if you listen to this program and you don't mind giving back to me to keep it going, just check out the link, leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. Anyway, thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. Here it is, my conversation with Aaron Gillespie of Under Oath and The Almost. What's up, man?
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Fantastic, dude. Nice to talk to you.
Good. You too, man. I was surprised. I saw you on my thing today. I'm stoked. That's awesome.
Oh, you didn't know?
I didn't know till this morning. I mean, I got like I got a schedule this morning, and you were on it. I was like, super stoked.
Oh, cool, cool. No, it was actually done kind of last minute. So it was like,
oh, cool.
Just
cool.
Like a few days ago. I feel like dude, congrats on the new record. But first off, man.
Thanks. Thank you, man.
I had a couple days to kind of, you know, listen to it. They sent it to me early. It's awesome.
There's
a lot to digest, man.
It means a lot coming from your friends, you know? I think that, yeah, that's cool.
Well, yeah,
thank you.
I've known you for so long. I mean,
yeah, it's been years, man.
This is your third time on the podcast. One other person's ever been on three times.
Three times, dude. I usually give me stock. I'm just kidding. I'm a veteran.
I'll send you a birthday gift or something.
There you go.
Thanks for the hours of your time. Listening to
it's
Babylon.
My pleasure. It's my pleasure.
But I feel like, first off, man, I feel like this kind of record kind of came out of nowhere. Like all of a sudden, you know, Under Oath's back. It's like, you're doing Erase Me. You're doing all these tours. I saw you this summer.
Yeah.
You know, with Korn and Alice in Chains. And now all of a sudden here you are with like this super polished, very well thought out record. Have you been working on this for like years? Did you just kind of have this window of time like where you said, okay, I have this inside me. I have to get it out. How did it all kind of come to fruition?
I want to say like, all week I've been wanting to say like, yeah, man, you know, this is my life's work. I've been working on this for like 5 years. But when we were doing, we did a tour at the end of the year last year called the Erase Me Tour. And it was one of those tours that you like thought would never happen, you know, in terms of a headliner. It was just the best rooms we've done, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, successful, like our most successful to date. And it was, and I'm happy, you know, like I was so super stoked. But I started having all these ideas for songs. And when the Almost initially happened, like in 07, it was during when we were doing the whole Define a Great Line thing. And I had written all these songs that just didn't fit the Under Oath format at the time, you know?
Right, of course.
And I guess now with Under Oath, we've made this decision, you know, a couple years ago, we get back together, like there wouldn't be that like Under Oath quotations format anymore. We would just make songs that were the best we could make, you know?
Yep.
So we had a record that just had come out. We were on our first real headlining tour off of it, but I had all these ideas. So I was like, I'm just going to start writing songs. And I've been doing like a lot of co-writing with EDM artists and stuff and pop artists and just writing, you know, just working. So it's like, I don't know what this stuff is, but when we get home from this tour, this would have been like December of last year. I'm like, we get home from this tour, I'm just going to go. I have a little a studio like a mile from my place. And I was like, I'm just going to go in and just record these, you know, just like demo with them out and see. And then I ended up writing a song a day for like the whole month of January of this year. Like I wrote like, it might have been more than 30 songs, but I kept writing and kept writing and kept writing. And eventually Randy, my manager and I, we started having a conversation like, maybe we should put this out. Like, well, how do we do it? What is it? You know, like it was right. That whole thing. Like
right.
There's these songs, like where do they live? Like who are these songs? And we kind of had collaborative idea, like let's bring the Almost back and do like a thing. And we've been kicking around the past couple of years. Like somebody wanted to do a 10-year Southern Weather tour, which would have been 2017. But at that point, you know, we were like ankle deep in making the new Under Oath record, and I just wasn't there. You know, so this is kind of a classic case of like the reason it happened the first time is like I had these songs,
right?
And I think which is the beauty in this project for me is it's sort of like a conduit that I can like put things that I'm really passionate about. But don't have a home. You know what I mean?
Totally. So, well, it seems like you're inspired now for this record the same way you were inspired for the first record, Southern Weather. I mean,
yeah, that's the thought.
A really cool thing. Except, of course, you've grown as a person over whatever it's been 12 years. You know, mm-hmm. You've changed. You've been through relationships coming and going, birth of your son. You know, just all this different perspective. The way religion's changed in your life. My phone is ringing. Hold on,
sounds like you're in an office building. You have a landline?
I'm in my parents' house. That's why. Hang on a second.
Oh, gotcha.
Sorry, one
second.
Hello? Oh, my God. Hello? Sorry about that.
Hey, so do the landline.
I know. My parents are old school, dude. Yeah, they're my parents are I probably shouldn't say this on the radio on the podcast, but my parents are out of town. This won't be up for weeks anyways. They'll be home when you listen
you're
to
fine.
This.
But fine.
But they're out of town, so I'm just kind of like watching over their house. And well, Silverstein, we're making a record in Toronto. So it's just like 25 minutes away.
Oh, nice.
But that call, so we have a federal election in Canada. And the election day is on Monday, and that was the fucking conservatives calling to try to get us to vote, like the party, like I can't stand.
So how does it work in Canada? Excuse my in ignorance, but you guys have like conservatives, and then what else? Like
we have our two main parties, kind of like the Republicans and Democrats, are conservatives and liberals.
Oh, so it's just straight up. They give you the whole explanation in the name. I love it. It'd be so much easier if we did that here.
Except the colors are reversed. Liberal is red here, and conservative is blue. Just to make it a little more confusing.
Wild. So just make the name easy, then flip the colors. I love it.
I know. And then, then we have we do have other parties too, though. So like, and other parties do actually.
They're funded. Like you're allowed to.
Yeah,
they're actually votable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like, I think the third party, like the third highest party, is called NDP, and they're like even more progressive than liberals generally. And they have like, I don't know what they have now, like maybe like 17% or something. So they still have like a chunk, and they will win.
Cool.
They'll win like certain. They'll win like quite a few seats, and then they'll also win like on the, you know, provincial level. And the municipal level, they'll win like all the time in different regions of the country.
So, that's cool that you have different parties.
Yeah,
choose
and there's
from.
Also
I mean,
a Quebec party called the Bloc Québécois, and their whole thing. And pardon my ignorance, any Canadians listening to this, if I'm wrong, but their whole thing initially, at least, was like they wanted to separate from Canada. So they were like the separatist
party. I read about that. Yeah.
But they have like quite a bit of clout too, you know, in Quebec. So yeah, it's different up here, but we have a big election and it's a very important one because, I don't want us to go backwards again, you know?
Sure. So. Yeah. I mean, yeah, let's not even get started on that.
I know.
We could go for an hour on that in here, but
totally. Yeah. Man. Well, sorry about the interruption.
No, come on. It's awesome.
Well, I totally forget where we were.
Me too. You were talking about, I don't remember.
I feel like I was making a great point. I probably was, let's be honest.
You were saying something sick.
But no, I think it was just about, you know, comparing making your first Almost record to this one. And, you know,
yeah,
the similarities,
yeah.
But also the major differences. But I read, and this is, I just love this because I can like picture this in my head. Have you seen the movie Tommy Boy?
Of course.
Okay. I almost picture you driving out with Matt Squire yeah. In a U-Haul to California, apparently getting kicked out of an Airbnb.
Oh, my God.
I picture, like, for some reason, I can only picture Tommy Boy when they take the road trip. I don't know why. Or maybe Dumb and Dumber, but I don't mean to be insulting.
Dude, that's what it was like. It was wild. Like, so, I mean, I'll unpack it a little bit for you. I had rented, so I took my, I ordered cases and, like, literally put my whole studio in, like, rolling road cases, like you would put yeah. guitar amps in. So I rewired this whole thing, and I'm alone, right, at this point. Like, so I rent a U-Haul van, just like a cargo van, you know, like a metal empty back with a grate and
yeah.
the full thing. So I wrap all this stuff up, and I drive 9 hours to Joshua Tree, California. And management had found this place, this Airbnb that said, they don't care what you do. Like, you can make noise 24 hours a day, blah, blah, blah. So I get there and Matt's slated to come in that night and we're going to start that night. So I get there, I set everything up. It takes me like 5 hours, right? I'm running snake and cables yeah, and yeah. I get there and I realize I forgot all of the cymbals for the drum kit.
Okay.
So like I'm 9 hours from where I live. So I go to Guitar Center and spend like $2,500 on cymbals.
Oh, brutal.
So I get.
When was the last time you actually had to buy cymbals?
I sound so douchey saying that, but it's been a long time.
It's probably been like 20 years. I know, dude.
Yeah.
Cymbals are so expensive. Oh, my God.
People are nuts. I literally, like, I picked up this ride cymbal and I was like, how much does this one cost? And I feel so stupid and, like, you know, like white people problems
that's
even saying that. But, like, it was $525, my normal ride cymbal. And I was like, I can't buy this fucking thing. Like, what am I going to do? So anyways, I buy all this stuff. So that started it. And I'm like, oh man, this is going to be bad. So I get back. Matt comes in. I'm like, I'm over the $2,500. I'm like, let's just have a good time and make this record. And we record 2 takes of a drum track and there's a policeman at the door.
Wow.
And I'm like, I mean, I'm talking about 12 minutes. Like, I mean, it was so fast. And then this dude is like, and it's so weird because he's like walking around all corners of the house, shining his flashlight in. I'm like, oh my gosh, like we're so screwed. So I call Randy, our manager. I'm like, what do I do? He's like, just go to bed. It's 11 p.m., you know?
Right.
And I'm wondering, like, there's nobody around. I'm like, what is happening? So like, anyways, we go to bed, wake up the next day, we start cutting some guitars to that song. Within five minutes, the Airbnb owner calls, you're kicked out. And we're like, they gave us all our money back, the whole thing. But I'm like, well, I have 1 week, like in between Under Oath tours to make this album. And it's just me recording, so I can do it quickly. But like, what am I going to do? Like, at this point, I've got all my gear out here.
Yeah.
You know, we've bet all the money on one horse. Like, So Matt and I spent an hour, 2 hours. It's two of us now, so it's quicker. So we loaded this whole studio up into my van, and at this point, we're homeless. So totally dumb and dumber. And we're like driving around the desert while management is calling around. And there's some studios out in Joshua Tree, you know, like the guys from Queens of the Stone Age own a place.
Okay.
There's another, theirs is only, really the only like super real studio. A lot of the places out there are sort of like fashion. There'll be a recording studio there, but it's for like people from LA to go and take pictures. You know what I mean?
Right,
it's like it's like an Instagram type thing. So we're calling around. Nothing's available. One place is like gorgeous online, but there's nobody there because they really only go there to take photos for Instagram. So we're like, we're so screwed. So we find a studio finally, and it's this place called Gatos, and it's super cool. It's this old barn on this guy's property, and it's really in the middle of nowhere, like 15 miles from a gas station. So we get there, and he's like, I'm like, look, I'll pay you up front. I just have to get this done. So he has a studio with a big console and these sliding doors that open onto the, into the desert. It's amazing. We get there and he goes, well, you can't use the studio. I'm like, what? Like, he goes, I have a local band coming in a couple of days. And I'm like, dude, can I call them? Like, I'll pay them. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
I'll pay them to push their project like 3 or 4 days. Like, I'm screwed. Like, this is in between the Breaking Benjamin tour and something else we did. So, like, I had to, like, get it done in this time frame. So, and at this point, I've got Matt Squire in Joshua Tree and a van and all my stuff. So he's like, he's like, no, sorry. He's like, but I have a house that I live in on the property. And I'm like, how much is it to rent your house? Right. Cause we were recording in a house initially. So this dude slept on the couch in his studio and we rented his house and made this album.
Oh my God.
And that the studio crazy. Just sat in the studio, just sat empty except for like a 12-hour period where there was a local band in for like two sessions. But it was so wild because we made this whole album on a property that is gorgeous studio, but just in a house.
So you really only spent a week doing this record?
We recorded for 6 actual days because we lost a day due to the fuckery. So yeah, man, 6 days.
That's and insanely fast. Wow.
And that's to say, like, you know, the nature of this project, I like did really good pre-production and demos. You know what I mean? So like I spent a couple of months like writing these tracks. So it wasn't like I showed up and
you
there was like no
to, like,
bridges
work out,
to song.
Yeah, you'd have to like work out a lead or anything. Like you had that all kind
of done. And I was doing an interview yesterday and they're like, wow, that's amazing. But when you really break it down, like I don't want to give myself too much credit because it was all my gear, like all my studio gear, all my like music here, like, and I literally just know all the sweet spots. I know how to get the sound. You know what I mean? So it was like, and Matt Squire and I have worked for months and months and months together on Erase Me. So we have each other's number, like workflow wise, you know? So it was like, it wasn't like Aaron's amazing. It was more like we had our shit figured out so we could do it. But
so maybe this is an obvious question, but if you have all your studio gear in a studio and obviously Matt Squire has a studio, why are you going to this random location 9 hours away from yourself to make this record?
It's a really good question. You ever like, you're in a band and you know, we've toured with each other and we've had weird conversations at night and the whole thing about just doing something different or like, you know, you can't just do the same thing over and over again, you know? And we had made this album in 2017 that came out last year with Under Oath. And it was like a long process, like the traditional rock and roll process where it takes a long time and you do a month of pre-production and it's great. And I like that approach, but what I really wanted to do was like make a destination album. Like you see, I guess as a kid, you see like all these documentaries about like bands going somewhere, you know, like the Stones or the Exile, like how they went to France to get out of taxes and ended up making this record in this hot house with a truck that belonged to the Beatles out front recording the whole thing, you know, like, I just wanted to do something that was like different. And I've always loved that part of the world. Like Joshua Tree is just like it's like being on the moon or Hoth or something. It's like the weirdest place. So we thought initially it was going to be like a super easy, cheap thing to do. And it ended up becoming a bit of a cluster, but we worked it out and it was super cool, man. Like we had such a good time and Matt and I still talk about like how kind of charmed the process was and how we actually pulled it off. You know what I mean?
No, totally. So, I mean, I have my notes. Yeah. It sounds like it was an adventure before you even recorded one note. And like, in some ways, yeah. that's inspiring in and of itself. It's like, okay, finally we set everything up. Finally we figured this out. Now it's like, okay, now it's like crunch time. Here we go. Like, you know, which sort of feeds into, to make a little segue here, comes into the first track on the record where you talk about coming alive in a chokehold.
Right.
I mean, and that's a quote that sorry to cut you off, but that's a line that resonated with me. I don't think it's about like BDSM or anything. if it is, dude, that's cool. But I think it's like you're the kind of person that is elevated when you have stress or you're in an uncomfortable situation. Is that accurate?
That's more than accurate. I mean, I think for me, like, I'll kind of explain this with a story that you and I share. You know, like, both of our bands have toured for a long time, and we've been super fortunate. You know, I think anybody that still has a job in music in 2019 is super fortunate. But like, sure. You know, we've done a lot of tours as separate bands, and like, you've been to Europe a bunch of times, and I've been to Europe a bunch of times, and it's been amazing. But when I tell people about European touring, the first story I tell them is when you and I,
yeah,
and when Summer Singing Under Oath went to Europe together, we shared that bus with that awful driver, and everyone got sick as shit. Yep. And it was terrible. It was terrible. We put 21 people on a 16 bunk bus or whatever it was. Like,
yep. And 21 and 18.
When I think about like European touring and someone asks me about it, I always tell those stories because those are more fun to talk about than when you sold out the Forum in London.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So for me, like what that song means is like, I feel like for as an artist and as a man and just as a thinker and a writer and all of those things, I do better when squeezed and not literally squeezed, but like when things are a little bit adverse and things are a little bit uncomfortable, I feel like I make better art. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely,
so, and I feel like I make better decisions, which makes no sense. You know, a lot of people are like, I'm going to buy a car. I need to like research for 6 months. That's just not the way that I do life. I feel like when there's the proverbial gun to my head, I can do act and think better, which is kind of the antithesis of how life should be.
Yeah.
But it's just how I've always been. And that song's sort of a confessional win.
Right. But there's, you know, adrenaline is a real thing, you know, like that adrenaline rush, and you hear about mothers picking up cars when their children are trapped underneath them. Like there are
totally.
these, there's some element of realness to that. And that's not necessarily just, you know, your own personality, although I'm sure it is a big part of it. But I mean, I think this record is really good, man. And, it's obvious that now that I hear you put yourself in this situation, maybe a part of yourself in the back of your mind knew it might kind of go wrong. And that might have been what drew you to it. I mean, the whole idea of self-sabotage, that's another thing that's real, that people do all the time, don't even realize they're doing it. Making the same mistakes over and over again, you know?
It's funny that you bring that up, because the life that you and I lead is kind of self-sabotaging. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Both of us probably should have gone to school. I don't know if you went. Did you go to school?
I didn't finish. I did do 2 years in college, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, both of us probably should have, and blah, 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 blah. Like, what if it hadn't worked? You know, like, what if you couldn't pay your mortgage by playing in a band? But I think that's the beauty of what we do and who we are as people. Like, not just you and I, I'm talking like collectively, you know, like, I think that's the beauty is like, you don't get this kind of art by not paying for it. And what I mean by that is like, you don't get to do this wonderful, beautiful thing that some of us call a job without taking that risk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like when you fall in love with someone, like you kind of take the risk. I was listening to a song yesterday. Do you know, this guy's a Canadian actually. And I just saw him play. His name's Donovan Woods. Do you know him?
I know that name.
He's a massive songwriter. Okay. He's from Canada. And apparently he's big in Canada. I don't know. I saw him open up for Casey Musgrave's husband the other night.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, like, he has this song there's this line in the song where he goes, I wouldn't be afraid to say I love you even if you didn't say it back. You know what I mean? Like, right. And that's what like truly falling in love means. And I feel like that's what musicians that do this all the time have done is you kind of pour your heart, your soul, your love, your everything into this. And you don't know if it'll give back to you. You don't, You know what I mean? And I can say this for you and I can say this for me. In the beginning, we would have paid to do this and we did. You know what I mean? Like, it was like,
well, we,
like
paid, you, we paid financially and we paid, you know, with our own souls and emotions. I mean, you know, absolutely.
Totally. So for me, that's kind of the crux of the whole thing is like, I want to make honest stuff. And I've been so lucky, you know, like so freaking lucky to be able to do this for as long as I have. So for me, it's just, that's kind of a goal. It's like, I want to make this honest, real stuff in Under Oath, in this band, in every facet, you know, because I'm allowed to do this, which is like, you know, there's 1,000 guys playing in 1,000 bars tonight that are more talented than I'll ever be. And they got to go to work tomorrow at Burger King or whatever. You know what I mean? So like, I'm just thankful, dude, honestly, to have a job in music in 2019. So yeah.
Hell yeah, man.
Hi, I'm your inner dream monologue and you're fast asleep. So I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White overnight teeth whitening pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I gotta say, I was not expecting the U2 cover.
Me either.
did that come with the whole Joshua Tree? Like, did something come over you? Like, well, I'm at the Joshua Tree. Might as well cover a song from the Joshua Tree. Is that the story?
Pretty much. I mean, there's a little more thought out than that. That's like my favorite album ever made, Joshua Tree from U2, and it's really hard to like, it's really hard to cover certain songs, right? Like, it's really hard to like, I think there's some rules to like covering songs as a band. Like, you can't cover the Beatles. You know what I mean? But like, you can kind of cover a couple Rolling Stones songs, maybe. And I like the Rolling Stones more than the Beatles. Don't shoot me. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's probably not a good idea for you to cover Jeff Buckley. Like,
well, that's
it just probably isn't.
I'll give you that one, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I have these weird unspoken rules about covers. And I like, sometimes live solo, I'll play like Streets Have No Name and I put it on like this small release a record that I did a few years back, but I didn't really talk about it or like allow it to be like, you know, publicized. And I feel like with you two, like you can't go out and cover with or without you. You just can't. Like, it's wrong to me. Like, you'll never ever do it justice. But I feel like with In God's Country, like the album version, I don't love. Like, I'm like, yeah, it's great. But I heard this live version while we were gearing up for this to make this record. And I wish I could remember like which live version it is, but there's this live version and it's way like the version that I recorded. Like, it's not as subdued as the album version, you will. It's got like, you know, U2 live at that time was like, dude, it was like I wish I would have seen it. Like, Randy, my manager, he saw the Joshua Tree tour two nights in a row. Like, he went in New York and then left. And he said like people were singing One in the parking lot. He's like, dude, it was the most insane experience. He's, you know, and this dude's seen a billion shows. He's in his 40s or whatever. And he was like, I've never seen anything like it. He goes, I literally bought tickets from a scalper like the next day to go see it again. And if you know anything about Randy, like, he's like anti-scalping. Like, if you follow his Twitter, he's always reposting stuff about like ticket fraud and like he's into the music tech world, you know. So he's like super like super against that. So that live version, I can see why he would buy tickets from a scalper. So the live version is really what gave me kind of the juice in the tank to make the cover, and also like where we were and the spirit of the whole thing. And I think that cover kind of ties the record together in a weird way. And like, I've never been like a covers guy, but it it just, for me, it kind of puts the bow on the package.
No, so. It's true. I can't really remember ever hearing you do a cover, actually.
Not really my thing, man.
Like, maybe I heard you cover, like, something acoustic once, like Radiohead.
Maybe. I don't know.
I heard you cover. But, I really heard, like, Bono in you. Like, I obviously you don't sound like Bono, but I could hear it. I don't know, maybe it's just his melodies, or I've heard that song so many times, but I could hear it. Like, it was really cool. I thought it was, you did a really great job.
Thank you, man.
I've grown to kind of hate you too, mostly because for some fucking reason, dude, when I plug in, I have like an iPhone, like a 10, like a, you know, my phone's pretty new. For some reason, when I plug my phone into like a rental car or like, or something, that U2 album that they put on everybody's phone that I've tried to delete, it still comes up, man. It's still, I cannot get, it's like a bad penny. It's just like, it keeps turning up. I cannot get rid of it. And that is not a good record. I'm sorry.
No, U2, in my opinion, like, U2, I have a U2 tattoo. It's like something that I love, but I haven't purchased or sought out a U2 album since How Did This Male Atomic Bomb, which was probably 2007. Yep. Yeah, at some point, it's okay to go out and tour and just play the hits. Like, when you've made that many great records and you've had this much success, it's like, okay, man, like,
yeah,
you're okay. Like, you're all right. Like, if you go into studio and you know that you wrote Where the Streets Have No Name, and then you're writing like Get On Your Boots song, whatever it's called, it might be time to like look at yourself in the mirror and go, okay. Like, but then again, that's the thing. That's a cool conversation. Like,
yeah,
those dudes are just doing what we're trying to do and make art that they love. And some people don't like it. You know what I mean? Like, and some people do. And like, we all deal with that, you know? And that's like a super, that's a super interesting thing.
I can't wrap
my brain around.
I just think it's interesting that on any level of music, like, U2 is at the very, very top, right? They've got to be, if not the biggest band in the world, like in the top three or five biggest bands in the world. And even at that level, they have the same issues that like, you know, bands on our level have, you know?
We're over here bitching about it, and then someone's going to bitch about our new record, and we're going to be salty.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly, right? It's exactly. But you know, I actually think U2, they stayed relevant with their new music kind of well past when they should have. Like,
totally.
They were still making, like, The Beautiful Day and all that. Like, that shit was pretty decent. And they'd already been a band for, like, well over, like, 25 years. And they were making, like pretty good, putting out some pretty good songs. Like, I mean, when was the last time you brought the Rolling Stones? Like, when was the last time they even put out original music? I mean, they've been touring on the hits for like literally 30 years, haven't they?
I wonder how you know. Like, I wonder what, like, I mean, obviously neither one of us are in bands that size, and it would be cool to be, but like, you know, wonder when you know, like, hey, like, we should like not make any more songs. Like, I wonder when that's like a thing where you're like, yeah, you know what? You guys just want to go on tour and play the hits. Yeah, me too. Okay, yeah. Sick. Like, well, I wonder when that's.
Thing. I had the guy, the dude from Real Big Fish, Aaron Barrett, on the podcast. This is years ago now, but I asked him, like, when can we expect a new Real Big Fish record? And he said, and I thought he was kidding, but I'm still not sure. He said, there won't be any new music. The Real Big Fish discography is complete.
Really?
That's what he said. I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
I'd have to look up and see if they've made anything lately and if he was just fucking with me. But that goes to what you're saying. I mean, maybe at some point you just decide, well, how many more upstrokes can we do? Or like, you know, we've put lots of sick horn parts on this and like maybe it's time just to enjoy it. I don't know.
That's scary though for me. Like, that makes me wanna like, that makes me just go into like this brain hole of like, you know, with Erase Me, the last Under Oath record, like a lot of people liked that record and a lot of people were pissed. You know what I mean? Yeah. A lot of people were like, where's my band from 07? And, you know, and the conversation with a musician is always, you want the same thing over and over again, then we're duping you, you know, like as the fan, like if we made you Define the Red Line Part 2, we're doing you a disservice. You know, we're not giving you our best foot forward. We're not giving you our honesty. You know what I mean? But I wonder at some point, like, Like, how far will fans go with a band? You know, I think about that all the time. How far will fans go with an artist? Like, how much can you grow and evolve, in quotation marks, in the way that you want to before fans are like, okay, you know what? I'm going to move on. You know what I mean? Like, with the Under Oath album, like, people loved it and people hated it. And I think it was polarizing for some people, but I think it was a good thing for us at that juncture. It had been a decade since we made an album. But I wonder how long you can do that before you have to say what the Real Big Fish guy said, which is just like, you know what? It's complete. Like, we've got everything we need. Like, I wonder how long that goes before you just have to look at yourself in the mirror and go, I just need to make music under a different moniker or a different name. I think about that all the time. Like, you know, how far can you go? Not that I want to push it to the limit, but I'm interested. Where's the edge of the precipice? You know, like, where is, you know, how do you guys do that? Like, do you feel like you're making a record now? You said earlier, how far are you pushing it now? And do you want to push it further?
Well, it's interesting because I feel like we've had this thing with Silverstein, like, over the years. This is our 9th album, which is pretty crazy. And
jeez.
And every one of our records has been very, very much a natural progression to where we've never like spoken about the direction of the record until we've kind of written at least, I want to say, 75% of the record. And then we go, okay, how are we going to fill in the gaps? Like, what are we missing in this record that we need to make this a complete record? Like, do we need a really mellow song? Do we need something heavier? Do we just need a couple like in between tracks? Like, what do we need? And then that's when we finish a record. So by the time we're kind of done the record, we haven't actually like talked about it. But also, I feel like when bands talk a big game before they make a record, like they go in the studio and they say something like on Twitter, like, this is going to be the heaviest record we've ever made. And then they go in the studio and then they try to make a really heavy record and then it's just shitty because they were not doing what they, you know, they weren't doing something that was natural, that came like naturally to them. Then it's bad. So this record, I think for the first time, I haven't spoken about this at all, but this record is going to be different. There's no question. Like, we've definitely taken some steps in some different directions, which I am really excited about because we haven't done that before. This is definitely going to be, I think, the biggest step we've taken between records. It's also been longer, too. It's also been like three years since we put out a record. So I think that makes a difference, too. We don't really talk about it. It just kind of happens. And I feel like that's kind of an honest way to do it.
With this, you know, with this Almost record and with the last Under Oath record, we never did an Under Oath. We never sat down and said, okay, you know, this is going to be our heavy album. This is going to be, we all are into different things. And I think we're all the most chameleonic people. Like, we get in this situation where we all are listening to different things or reading different things or whatever, and then we end up just coming out with something and people like it or they don't. But I feel like that's the only real way. Like, what you're saying is the only real way to do it. Like, the only real way to give people art that's truth is by, you just have to kind of go and do it, right? Like, and if it's polarizingly different or exactly the same, you hope that your public follows you. But like, I think that's the only way to do it. And in the case of this Almost record that came out today, actually, you know, it's like, I just wanted I didn't even think about what it sounded like, literally, you know, and that's a weird sentence. Like, that's a weird statement to go, I don't know what it sounds like. You know what I mean? Like, when we made Erase Me for Under Oath, people would ask me and I go, I don't know. It's really different. And I would get the question, why is it different? I would go, I don't know. You know, it's been 10 years. So
it's because
this is what you have.
Yeah. It's because you think of your own art. You're so immersed in it that you don't like always know, oh, is this heavy? Well, like, something could be really heavy to someone else because it's like got screaming and like maybe like one of those like dissonant sounding chords over it. And like the drums are like really slow. But then like something could be heavy to you because of like what it means. You know, and like, and how emotionally, like how much emotional turmoil is in. What did you say a minute ago?
Chameleonic.
That's a fucking word. I never heard that word before. I love it.
I don't know. I don't even know if it's a word.
I don't know
is it a word? We're just talking shit. Talking shit on a Friday.
But seriously though, there's so much difference between, you know, the idea of emotionally heavy and actually just sonically heavy. And I think sometimes those things can get confused because there's more to music than just like or more to heavy music, let's call it, than just like a chug chug guitar and a scream.
Totally.
You know, it's about what totally. The feeling is. It's about how you set it up before. You know, there's a whole bunch of factors that come into play. You know,
dude, the heaviest thing to me ever, like when we before Under Oath had any real traction, we were kind of a local band. You know that band Hope's Fall? They had a different singer.
Yeah.
And they put out this EP called No Wings to Speak Of. And that's the heaviest fucking thing in the world to me, because I was there for that. Like, I saw them play and people like crying in the crowd. And I was like, this is so fucking heavy. But if, you know, people listening to this podcast, you know, go buy that EP online or go download that EP on Spotify, they're going to be like, both of those dudes are on drugs. Like, you know what I mean? They're going to be like, this is truly not heavy. And I think that way about our band a lot. Like, there's songs on Erase Me that I think are so heavy because I was going through a divorce when we were writing that thing. And like, you know, Spencer was getting off drugs and it was really, really a dark time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, in a really heavy time. And I think that I've decided for me that heavier music is more about the content than the sound. Like, it just is.
Yeah.
You know, if like, some guy saying "oh" over and over again, and they're being like, that to me isn't heavy. I mean, it is on paper, it's heavy. And then sometimes, dude, I there's something wrong with me. Sometimes I think that like Under Oath isn't heavy at all, and sometimes I think it is heavy. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's heavy songs on this record. We did that self help thing last weekend.
Yeah.
And there's so many great bands, right? So many great bands, and the lineup at the end of the day, there was a bunch of bands that I can't remember all the bands, but the lineup at the end of the day was Beartooth, I Prevail, Us, and then A Day to Remember headline.
Yep.
Right. And I remember like being halfway through the set and thinking in my head, like, which is so weird, like, you know, on stage, thinking in my head, like, this is like, I guess we're pretty heavy compared to a lot of these bands. You know? But then if, you know, someone listening to this would go listen to like all the Data Remember breakdowns or all the Epivale breakdowns or Beartooth break and be like, Under Oath is such wussies. But like, looking at the other guys in my band, like the way they behave on stage and in my head being like, dude, this fucking heavy. You know what I mean? Like, and it's really not heavy, but it's like, it's contextually heavy for me. So I think that I've decided in my 36 years that heavy is more of a feeling for me than it is like a sound.
At least
so.
Now, at least when you're 36, you know, years old, that's how you feel. When you're 21, it's all about just like, okay, like how low can we tune this fucking guitar and like that kind of shit, you know?
Gosh, I've noticed that too. Like, I don't write in all those guitar tunings, you know? So right. Like when we started making this Almost record, Squire was like, yeah, I just finished, whatever record he finished, and I've got this Evertune guitar, which is a guitar that like has this thing on the back. It can never go out of tune.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We have one for Under Oath that we use for the studio or whatever. He's like, it's in B. Is that cool? And I'm like, what? Like, it's in B? No, that's not cool. It's not cool at all. Like, I literally, this record is in E standard. You know what I mean? So I think that, again, with the heavy conversation, like, so many Under Oath songs are still in drop D. Like we never got there. Like, I don't know. It's so funny, but you're right. You know, when you're 21, you're like, man, that's so deep. That's so low. And I'm just like, I can't hear what key to sing and help me.
So, oh, that's funny. Well, talking about Erase Me, it's been like a year and a half, I guess, since that record came out.
Yeah.
I know you were talking about the dark times. A lot of things have changed in your life. Looking back on that record, how do you feel about it now?
I love it. You know, like I can't do the thing anymore of like, if we as musicians who are quotation marks professional, like if you, every record, if you went back a couple of years or 18 months or whatever posthumously, and you were like, let me dissect how I feel about you, would do that would kill you. You know, I was reading an interview with Zach Lynch from Jimmy Eat World yesterday, and they were asking him to go run down and like give the best five Jimmy Eat World records. You know, and the funny thing is he couldn't really do it, and the one he picked wasn't I Wasn't Clarity, and it wasn't Bleed American or whatever that one became to be. but it was, I can't remember what it was, but it was like some EP or something strange that was a really difficult process in the making. And that's why he remembers it fondly, because it was hard to do. You know what I mean? So with me, yeah, with me, with Erase Me, you know, again, we were talking about like that song Chokehold and how like I thrived through those times. It was a really hard time personally for me. And it was a really hard time personally for Spencer. And as we write lyrics together, and as we were doing that, it was like, we were sort of, it was the first time on an Under Oath album, and it had been a long time, that we like actually came out and said things kind of bluntly. We've always been a very like poetic, like, let's figure out how to say this that makes it ambiguous enough for anybody to make it about anything. And this time it was more like, let's just say how we feel. And making the album, once we got to the process of making it, it was just like a shot of adrenaline to be making an album and Under Oath again. Something that I never thought, like I earnestly and honestly never thought we'd make another album. So for me, it was like, when I look back on it, I love it, because it's been like a dream to be on stage with those guys again and have it work. You know what I mean? Like, we could have done that Rebirth tour and it sold out and it was awesome. And then we could have tried to do something and the fans could have said, no, thank you. Like, we just want our old Under Oath. But we were able to actually like continue a career with that and have a better couple of years than we've ever had as a band. You know what I mean? Like,
awesome.
So it's just, when I look back on it, it's just a charmed time, because it actually happened. You know what I mean? And whether or not it's people's favorite or least favorite, or whether they think it sucks or not, like, it's Under Oath again. And for me, that makes it great. So.
No, I really like the record. I had Spencer on, I think it was the release date of that record too, which is funny. And you know, we talked about the record in great depth, and I'd gotten it early and I listened to it, and that song still like resonated with me. And I remember hearing it and being like, that song, I hate it. That song is going to be a hit. And I told Spencer that, and he's like, yeah, no, we like think that song's like pretty good. I think I like that one. And now I'm hearing it on the radio in Detroit like all the time, man. So
yeah. I think what happens a lot of artists is like, I think intention, like we were talking about earlier, like when you intend to do something, it's never what you intend it to be. Hardly ever. Like, you know, like I think in pop music, like guys get in a room and they intend to write a hit and they do it. You know, like there's some Swedish songwriters that can just write hit after hit after hit after hit. But with Under Oath, that's never been our MO. And with the Almost, with this new album, I didn't like go try to make a hit, you know, which is probably why when you had that conversation with him, he was like, yeah, that's a pretty good one. You know, like,
right.
Because I don't know that in rock music, like in the music that we all make, I don't know that it's like, that it's a good headspace to go, I'm going to go make a hit. And I know people do it, like, but I just don't think for us and for me, like, it's just not a good place for me to be in. Like, I don't think that I can give the most honest representation of myself by trying to achieve a goal that I don't even understand.
No, absolutely. Another thing that was kind of interesting I thought about Erase Me was that you didn't sing as much lead vocal on it. You know, obviously Spencer has grown. He grew so much as a singer, you know, when you were out of the band. But it's almost like bringing the Almost back is maybe filling that void a little bit too. I don't know if there was an obvious, like an intentional thing to sing less on Erase Me or not.
I don't know. It wasn't like a thing where I woke up and was like, I'm going to sing less, you know, or a thing where like, I was like, I got to make a record because I didn't get to sing as much. I think with Spencer growing the way he's grown, like it just didn't make sense. Now, posthumously thinking about it, didn't make sense for us to be like, I'm going to sing and you're going to sing too. You know, I think in the beginning of Under Oath, there was me singing all the time because he was screaming all the time. So it was like this good cop, bad cop thing. Right.
Yeah.
And so now I didn't feel like when you were writing the songs with him being like, this is my part, I'm going to sing this. It didn't make sense to me to like, just kind of squeegee myself in there for what, you know what I mean? Like I'm a big fan in music of like, the way things need to be is the way they need to be. You know what I mean? Like, I always think that less is more. Like, putting 25 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag, there's going to be a rupture at some point. You know what I mean? So for me, it's like, I'd rather just put the 5 pounds of shit in the 5-pound bag. So that was sort of the goal there. And then with this Almost thing, I just had these songs and they were like, I really think they're like the best representation of who I am right now as a person, as an artist, as a songwriter, all those things. And I just felt like they needed to be heard, you know? So it was just kind of like a natural thing for me to go, okay, I'm going to do this. And then we're kind of fishing around for what is it, you know, who is it? What do we call it? What band is this? You know? So, it was just kind of a natural element for it. So, yeah. Wow.
I think it's a great record, and it comes out literally today. When people hear this, it will have been out for like maybe a week or two. Check it out, and you're going tour, right? You're going on tour in the new year?
Yeah, in the new year. I don't remember when it starts, but it starts in January at some point. And I'm stoked. It's just going to be like small rooms, you know, like 300-500 cap rooms. Getting back in a van, which I might die from, but we'll see what happens. I've done it a few times on solo runs and loved it. So I'm kind of stoked to do like, there's something people don't realize about touring and tour buses. Like if it's 2 a.m. and you're like, yo, you know, it'll be awesome. Dairy Queen. Like you can't do that, you know? So I'm pretty stoked about driving around and seeing some stuff. And, you know, it's kind of a whirlwind tour. It's like, there's like no days off. So we'll see what happens to me. Also, since 2004, I haven't really sang without in ears unless it was just like an acoustic thing. So I'm probably going to end up like bleeding from the throat, but we'll figure it out.
Are you doing this like solo?
No, full band, but I'm not doing in ears.
Oh, okay. Like, sorry. Yeah.
So, which is like, you know, the things you stuff in ears so you can hear yourself really good.
Yeah.
So I haven't done like a full band without in ears literally since 2004. So I'm not sure what's going to physically happen to my throat, but we'll see what happens.
Well, yeah, I see the dates here. It kicks off January 3rd in Orlando, Florida, going all the way till January 29th in Dallas, Texas. So,
yeah
that's a nice little run. That should be fun.
Yeah, I think so. I'm stoked. I think that it'll be fun to get out and play. Like, what I'm doing on the tour is I'm doing only Southern Weather and Fear Caller songs. So I'm not playing anything from the other two albums. So I'm going to do, like, the traditional, like, you know, 10-year album tour. I'm not going to go play the songs for Southern Weather in order. I'm going to open with a Southern Weather song and then play a song off this album and then play another Southern, it kind of teeter-totter the thing. So I think it'll be a cool experiment, you know, and also I'm not going to play the Southern Weather stuff in order. So, you know, you hear a Southern Weather song and then you hear one of these tracks, you're not going to hear the subsequent song. It's just going to be whatever else I decide. So I'm stoked about the set list and kind of going out and just doing something neat. And then at the end of the show, like the ballads on Southern Weather, I'm going to come out and just play them alone, which I think will be cool. So
nice, dude.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm stoked.
Tickets are on sale. Go get them. Go get them, people.
Yeah.
Anything else to tell the people before I let you go?
No. Get the record, get the tickets, come see us on tour and all that stuff. I'm excited to get a Silverstein record too. I you got me excited saying all the stuff you said earlier.
Absolutely, man. I'll try to send you something as soon as I can. And
Please,
last question. What about Under Oath? Are you guys starting to think about a new record? What's going on there?
So we just did, we just toured like forever. Like,
yes,
I think
did.
When we got back together, we did not intend on touring like we just did. So we just did, you know, we did Europe in June, had like 12 days off, did 8 weeks with Alice in Chains and Korn, had 4 days off, did Australia, came home for 10 days, and then just did self-help. So we're burnt. You know what I mean? Like, and then we're going to take a month off right now. And then we're doing like a residency at the House of Blues at Downtown Disney here in Orlando for Day to Remember. They're like their album release. So we're doing four or five shows, just us and them, that sold out already. It's freaking awesome. But, and then we're going to take off for the holidays. And then we've kind of started talking about writing. So I think that we'll start talking about that in the new year. We all write music separately now, which is a thing that didn't used to happen. You know, like everyone has like a project studio or something. Chris is scoring movies, so he's writing more than any of us. So we have a Dropbox that's filled with stuff. And I don't know, like filled with stuff from the summer. Like we wrote on tour separately, like doing your thing. So we'll start dissecting some of that stuff, but I don't have a timeline. You know, I think that we want to make an album for sure. I just don't know how long it'll take or when, you know, or what it's going to sound like. Again, with that whole conversation, like we haven't talked about a direction or which we don't do anyways, but we haven't, you know, we haven't had any conversations. I think we're just gonna let it kind of fold together. But we need a little time. We ran it in the ground pretty good. So yeah.
Well, that's good, man. Well, it's awesome that you have this other project now to fill a little bit of time, and all the best with everything,
yeah,
man. And
I'll
see you around
you.
Soon. Oh, actually, you know what? One more thing. What song should I play for the people right now?
Do you have like a, can it be a slow song?
Does that have to be a fast song? I would love to play a slow song. Sure.
Cool. Play a song. There's a song on the record called Life that I love so much. It's like a really, it's like a story. Yeah. So play that one.
I'll play Life. Here it is on Lead Singer Syndrome. Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it, Shane.
Thanks, man.
Talk soon.
I always thought I could get what I wanted if I just pushed enough. Act as sad as I wanted and something free happens. From the outside in, it's a gold mine. It all tends to rot when you get inside. Chain up all the hope, 'cause shit is what it's worth.
A new one from Aaron's project, The Almost, a great tune. And I want to thank Aaron so much for being on the program once again and just for being the best. Under Oath is taking a little bit of a break for now. They'll be back, but make sure you check out The Almost and Aaron when he comes through your town. And make sure you check out the special Halloween episode with Spencer of Ice Nine Kills tomorrow. And next Wednesday, episode 200, baby.
It's awesome. I'm so excited. I'll leave you with another tune, because why not? It's what we do around here. I'm going to play my favorite of the new Under Oath jams. The song I predicted would be a hit. Here is I Hate It on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you tomorrow.